Welcome to the Apartment Rockstar Podcast. Today, Robert is a guest on the Multifamily Rockstars with host Ryan Nunez. They talk about Robert's journey to 10,000 units, secrets to apartment investing, and how to prepare for unseen events.
Welcome to the show. Today's guest is Robert Martinez. Robert is the founder and CEO of Rockstar Capital, a multifamily owner-operator that has 21 apartment communities or 3,762 units. Robert and his team have won 17 city, state, and national apartment awards, as well as being named as high as number 15 in the Houston Business Journal's top 100 fastest growing companies. Robert shares a passion for soccer with his two boys, Ryan and Connor, and enjoys supporting their daily efforts in local club soccer. Robert, welcome to the show.
Hey, man, I'm so excited to see you again, Ryan. It's been a little bit. Saw you about 45 days ago.
Awesome. Now, this is great. Such a pleasure to have you, especially during this trying times, and looking forward to talking about your leadership background and your experience going through these challenging, turbulent market. So let's jump right in, Robert. Walk us through your background. Tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So like everybody else, I went to school and got good grades. I went to a good school. I went to Texas A&M University. I graduated with an engineering degree. And I went into the workforce, 23 years old. I learned after several years of being an outside sales guy. And now what I mean by that is I was a commission first sales guy. So if I didn't kill, I didn't eat at night. My family didn't eat at night. And that's where I got my personality, my attitude, my urgency, or sense of urgency, you know. But what happened in the workforce is I realized that I was really good at sales. I was able to connect with people. I was able to understand what it is that they wanted and see if the company I was working with could go and help them do that. And I got really good at it, and I made decent money. I was making maybe $140, $150 a year. But what happens is in corporate America, especially my employer, they want you making this, but I want to make this. And so, you know, I'm preparing to make this by planting seeds. And so I would have residual income moving forward for my sales commissions. And what happened is corporate America likes to play games and monkey with your commission plan and to keep me here in this level, not where I want to be. And I had an epiphany. And the epiphany was that I didn't control my financial future. My employer did. So they were able to control the kind of life I was going to lead, the kind of schools my kids were going to go to, college potentially where they were going to go to, the kind of vacations I was going to have, the kind of car I was going to drive, the kind of restaurants I could go eat at, and really control my lifestyle. Maybe really ultimately when I was going to retire. And I didn't like that. I wanted that control back. And so I started looking around at different ways to supplement my income at first. I looked at childcare facilities. I looked at a coin-operated laundromat. And I settled in on real estate by accident, which was the same story as a lot of people. Being a sales guy, I was in the car a lot, and I would listen to a lot of talk shows. And I found a real estate club here in Houston, Texas, where I'm based. And after a couple, 3 years of listening to it, when I finally got, you know, monkeyed over enough times, I decided, you know what, I'm going to go check this out. And it was about how to buy single-family houses or, you know, what I come to find out was how to buy apartment complexes. And I walked into that program thinking, I'm going to buy two or three single family houses. I'm going to make anywhere from $400 to $1,000. And I'm going to supplement the income that my employer was taking from me. And we'll just, you know, we'll see what happens, right? Well, I walked into the next day, right? Because it was a 2-day seminar and I learned about multifamily. And that was when it was a game changer. That was when I understood the value proposition and how you could really grow exponentially the value, right? Because in single family, you're based on comps. I can put granite countertops. I can have the latest and greatest. I can put smart features, whatever. But if the guy down the street doesn't have it, I can't get a whole lot more than what he's asking. In multifamily, I can tweak it. And my value is based on my NOI, rent minus expenses, NOI, right? And so if I raise income here, automate expenses there, and I showed a valuation increase on the NOI, my property is suddenly worth a lot more. That made a whole lot of sense to me. And more importantly, it was me. It was based on my efforts. It was based on what I could do. And that seemed the way to go for me. So I got into real estate in January of 07. I spent the year educating myself, just like what you're doing right now, you know, just networking, podcasting, you know, listening to different people, attending road trips. And by December of 07 that year, I partnered with another member of the club. And he and I went on to run 2,000 units together over the period of 3 years. I started Rockstar Capital in 2011 when I wanted to be I didn't want a partner. I wanted to be on my own. And since then, as you mentioned in my bio, we've got $380 million in assets. It didn't all happen at once. It was one deal a year. Mm-hmm. We started to pick up some steam, started to pick up some awards, and we recognized we're pretty good at this. And we started increasing the velocity of those deals. And, you know, we're now we're here. I'm excited. Our company has won 17 city, state, national awards. I'm the country's only two-time national award winner. So I think I found my niche. I think I found my calling in life. You know, I'm excited. This crisis doesn't scare me. I'm laughing. I'm smiling because we're ready to go. I mean, we've been preparing for this for a long time.
That's great. That's great. Congratulations on all your successes. And so, you know, let's dig into a little bit more of what you said. So, you know, starting Rockstar Capital, why did you all decide to self-manage instead of third-party property manage?
Because I'm a type A kind of guy. You know, I can't give somebody $200,000 of my money and think that I'm just going to let them run it. It was very important for me to understand. So when I got started in the business back in December of 07, when we bought our first deal, I moonlighted and I sat in that chair. And I think the lessons that I learned sitting in that chair for several months made me realize, wow, there's a lot of power here if you know what you're doing. But more importantly, I learned the rules of the game. A lot of guys out there aren't willing or don't want to learn the rules of the game. I'm an owner operator, true owner operator. I'm a practitioner. I understand what makes things move and how to move that needle, right? And how to, you know, right now, how to keep things afloat running forward. You know, people are worried about rent tomorrow and what's going to happen with everybody. I'm not worried. We've already done a survey. We know exactly what's coming in tomorrow. We talked to our people. We've explained to them the policies. We've talked about if they need rental assistance, how it's there. And if you don't need rental assistance, hey, we'd love for you to pay on time. And to incentivize you, we'll take 5% off of your rent the following month. I mean, it's a people game, understanding what people want, how to get in their head and help them make the right decision for everybody, for themselves, for us. So, you know, I could never have done that if I hadn't sat in that chair. You got to learn the rules of the game.
No, that's great. And so when you said sat in that chair, was that a third-party property manager that you sat with, or was that, were you already self-managing with another?
No, we immediately went and started our own property management company. Okay. Me, my previous partner, and I was the operating arm of that company. He was the CEO, I was the COO, but I literally sat in that chair. Really, I took on the assistant manager role initially so I can learn from the seasoned property manager how they did it. And after so many months, like, okay, I got this. This is good. And I just started to just continue to help where I could. I did my own tours. I learned the collection process. I learned the rules of collection, and I understood the property management things. You know, one of the things that's different with us is that we don't have true offices in our leasing office. I don't want the property manager sitting in the back, you know, snuck away, hid away from the residents. I want her up in the action. I want it where they can be seen, so the residents know if I say something, the manager is going to hear me, right? Because if the manager can't hear you, she can't fix it. Mm-hmm. She snuck away in the back. Well, how's she going to fix the issue?
Sure. That's great. It's a great concept. And so walk us through, you know, with Rockstar Capital, obviously you've been very successful, won a lot of awards. What's your vision for this year during some turbulent times, and then thinking through, you know, the next 3 years?
You know, we had plans to grow a bit more. You know, we had two deals that we were about to get in a contract. We got in a contract on one. We walked away from the other because, you know, if I can't see the light at the end of the tunnel, how am I going to get into that, right? It wasn't a deeper value add like the other one was, so we walked away. But, you know, we had aggressive plans. This year we've raised quite a bit of equity. You know, we've got a brand name in this business. We're known as a owner-operator company, and I think we know what we're doing. So, but what's occurring right now is a wonderful event, right? Because as everybody's about to prepare for war, we've been doing that, but we did it during peacetime when everything was calm, when all boats float, when the harbor's full, all boats float, right? And that's what's been occurring for a lot of people, is that they haven't been innovating. They haven't been planning. You know, 36 months ago, I got a chance to meet with Gary Vaynerchuk, and I went to his offices in New York, and I sat there with him, and he gave me some really important business lessons. And one of them was learn how to put yourself out of business. And what he meant was find the weaknesses in your business and pretend like you're going to exploit them, like you're the competitor. And now come up with a defense against it. And I realized we had several holes in our business. Number one game today is that this crisis is testing everybody's liquidity and their solvency.
Sure.
It's going to test how long you can move forward without assistance or without it being painful. I'm very blessed and very fortunate. I've assembled a great group of guys around me. My CIO, my COO, you know, our VP of operations. But we have the better part of 6 months reserves put away that if nobody were to give us a rent check tomorrow, we could survive for 6 months. If we get 60% occupancy, we could survive in excess of a year. And that's for a majority of my assets, right? So I'm excited. I'm not worried about this. We're going to let everything play out. You know, as you know, there's new information coming out almost daily on the virus itself, but also on what programs are out there, right? If I don't need the program, I'm not going to take it because nothing comes without strings attached.
Yeah, no, that's great input and great advice. So, you know, just paint the picture. You know, you had won a lot of apartment awards, just so the listeners understand kind of the context of that. Just walk us through how difficult it is to win those awards and how you do it and just the process there.
Well, you know, there's a lot of owners out there, right? And there's a lot of independent owners. But to my knowledge, I'm one of the largest independent owners in the country today at just under 4,000 units. But that doesn't happen overnight. That happens after years and years. And it happens because you got a great team. You know, we've won Property Manager of the Year. We've won City Property of the Year. Last year, we won National Property of the Year. As I mentioned, I'm the country's only two-time National Owner of the Year. excuse me. That happens out of experience and knowing what to do and trying to stay ahead of the curve, trying to move forward. So, I mean, it's just a process. You compete with everybody and really survival of the fittest. As I mentioned before, I came from a background where if I didn't kill, I didn't eat tonight. I take that in my business life. I focus on people and I focus on a sense of urgency. And I think if you do those things, combine them together, you got a deadly weapon. You can pretty much survive anything.
Yeah, that's great. And then is that based on reviews from tenants or just what's the criteria for winning?
Well, yeah, because in today's world, nobody shows up on a Saturday morning anymore with an apartment guidebook and says, I'm going to go through these 10 apartments. That doesn't work anymore. People today are online. People today are too busy. You know, what killed Blockbuster? Netflix. Why did Netflix kill Blockbuster? Because people didn't want to go to brick and mortar stores anymore and they didn't want to pay for rewind fees. They got into Netflix. Netflix started out originally as a mail order. People were actually willing to wait a couple of days to get their disc in the mail. And then sure. It turned into a streaming service and the game was over. Once it turned to streaming service, it was over, no matter what Blockbuster did. So what happens is you have to be willing to evolve. You got to be ready to go. So I said 36 months ago, we had a lot of holes in our business, right? That would make us very susceptible to damage in today's world. We didn't have a virtual tour set up. We do now. We didn't have an ability to collect rent other than, you know, putting a Dropbox or actually physically touching it. Today, all of our sites are 100% online payment. We're a paperless environment in all of our sites, right? So, I mean, we're prepared for this. This isn't anything new for us.
Oh, that's awesome. And then if we turn to COVID-19, you had mentioned some of the things that you're all doing, but maybe just walk us through what else, you know, advice you have for other people, what else you're doing, what you suggest doing, so forth.
Well, number one thing I think you need to do is you need to prepare when it was before this time. You're doing this right now. You're in a world of hurt right now. You've got to imagine this situation where people don't come to your leasing offices or what's going on. So number one, we got to protect our people. So we made sure that all of our people had the proper equipment to be able to continue to move forward. I'm very happy the government considered us an essential employer because we take our people residences, the pipe breaks, we got to fix it. We had a pipe break 2 days ago, right? So we had to take care of that. And it's interesting because on that pipe break, I knew about it. No one had to tell me because I saw a review come in. I see all reviews every single day. So my team knows that I'm going to see every single review. And I saw a pipe break and I actually reacted to it before some other people had because we had a new person who saw a review. They didn't know the right system. And so, you know, a couple hours have passed. And if I hadn't reacted myself to that, they would have been without water that day, you know, and that's a hole in our business. We're going to fix that. And that actually got fixed this week. But you have to be ready to react. You have to know. So number one, take care of your people first, right? Make sure they have gloves. Make sure they have biohazard suits in the events that they have to go into a unit. But really have a procedure set up. What is the procedure? Let's talk this through. You know, I'm really fortunate that we're now at 4,000 units. I'm able to attract the right kind of talent to my company. I've got somebody right now who's our VP of operations. She had 29 years at Camden. You know, my senior regional has 22 years as a senior regional, almost 10 years at Graystar recently. You know, you listen to those kind of people. You listen to the people around you. You know, I'm excited that we're at this point now because I couldn't have attracted them 3-4 years ago, right? But as you grew as a company, made those decisions, you brought them in. Well, you brought them in for a reason. Hear their expertise. Listen to what they're having to say. At the same time, explain to them what an owner-operator is and what he's trying to do. So once we took care of our staff, then we take care of the residents. We let them know, hey, what is your situation? Have you been affected by COVID-19? Have you been laid off? Okay, great. Here are our procedures. Here's our policies on how we're going to handle your rent for April. If you we give them links on who's hiring, links on different assistance programs. We advise them of the latest we hear. You know, government's going to do a stimulus check. This is, you know, you got to educate them, right? Because if you can't educate them and communicate with them, how are you able to get what you need from them? You know, communication is the key to life. So focusing on COVID-19. Now, it's a great chance too, right, to sit down and like, okay, where are we today with COVID-19? It's busier than ever right now. My phone, I am on conference call after conference call because of what's going on related to outside of COVID-19. How are the loans going to go? Mm-hmm. Is new financing available? If you need help, forbearance, what does that look like? A small business loan, what does that look like? My day is consumed today of understanding the programs that are out there and seeing if there's anything that we need to achieve, right? So it's really challenging, I think, the small time guy, because there's so many different things to have to examine that if you don't have that labor, division of labor, that bandwidth, how are you going to do it, right? So it's an interesting environment for everybody. Everybody's going to handle it differently. You know, I know you've had some other guests and, you know, they handle it one way. We're handling it a very different way. We're not afraid of it. You know, I have an expression, you don't fight the current. You go into the current. And it'll be a lot easier. Once you recognize and you go into the current, the pain kind of goes away. And just recognize this is a situation you're in. Now deal with the situation. Stop panicking, but have some patience because things change from day to day. There's a lot of misinformation out there. You know, right now your podcast is probably the 10th one that I've done in the last 2 weeks, right? But there's other webinars. There's webinars. We sat on one with Baker Botts here in Houston at the big law firm, and they gave a fantastic webinar on what the small business loan was. For example, did you know that if you have a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac loan, a government-backed loan, you now are required to hold off evictions for 120 days. That wasn't known a week ago. And it wasn't disclosed to us when we did a Fannie Freddie loan, right? So there's a lot of things that we're going to have to go through, right? So now we have to like, okay, so how's that going to work now if some of our residents are already behind on rent or they can't pay? Well, we got to figure out a plan for the next 120 days.
Sure. Absolutely. And so you talk, you know, I had the pleasure of going on your Rockstar bus tour, which was incredible, very insightful and so forth. And you talked about being a wartime general. So just walk us through some of the challenges that you've gone through and what those wartime battles look
like. Well, you know, here's an expression in Houston. This isn't my first rodeo. You know, I've been in the business since 2007 and I am a sales guy at heart. So again, I had to learn what I was going to kill at night. And I took that into the recession and we bought our deal in December of 07. And as you know, recession hit 08, 09, right? So we were still able to manage three refis during that time. But how did you do that? Three 100% refis, Ryan, just to make sure that's clear. And we did that by focusing on people first, but it was also hand to hand, right? You're hand to hand combat with people and 30 move in, 30 move out. Well, at some point you have to analyze, okay, why is that occurring? Right? Why are people moving out? Are you not taking care of them? Or is it really financially based? Then how are you able to get 30 leases in a month? That's a lot of number for any side, right? But you got to train your staff. So we're really getting back the basics. Basics from two sides. Number one, you focus on your team. Do they know how to properly explain the situation? Do they know how to properly ask the right questions? Do they know how to represent you as a property management company? And you focus on that first. Next, you focus on the resident. Number one thing people want is consistency. Give me consistency. I want my water to work. I want my electric to work. I want my air conditioning to work. I want the pressure to work. You could probably throw in Wi-Fi today because it's such a basic need now, right? But if you focus on those things, you will get through the situation. That's what we did during that time. We got through the situation.
No, that's great. That's awesome. So walk us through, you know, just so the listeners get a sense of what's different about a Rockstar community versus other communities out there. What differentiates your product?
Well, number one, how many owner operators see every single review that comes across their community? I take a lot of pride of how we handle ourselves as a business, right? So we made sure that we worked with a third party that could help us get, whether it's Google reviews, Facebook, apartmentratings.com, wherever, I see every single review. Then my team knows that I see every single review, and every single negative review I comment on and I ask for an explanation. And I think that if you listen to your residents, because they're communicating with you, right? You know, back in the day, I was afraid of it. When I first got in the business, I hated apartmentratings.com. I decided, you know what? Why are you afraid of this? Go into the current. Don't fight it, right? So we turned it into a weapon, right? Because think about it. Who's complaining on apartmentratings.com? Who's complaining on the sites? People that are either being evicted or upset because you're making them comply to the leasing aspects of their lease, right? To the lease, the community policies. Right. But what about all the good stories, Ryan? What about the people that have just leased an apartment? Aren't they excited to move in? What about the renewals that you just got? They've been there for a year, 2 years. Where's their review? So we started, you know what? We're going to combat this by promoting positive reviews. And we've done that for a period of time now. To my last knowledge, we're ranked as a property management company number 2 in the country overall as our portfolio for highest online resident satisfaction. I've got five properties that are amazing. Ranked in the top 1% for resident satisfaction out of 110,000 surveyed. Five, Ryan. I only have 21 communities, and five of them are ranked in the top 1%. All of my properties are top rated by apartment ratings, and according to them, we have eight communities ranked in the top 125, including the number one and the number two ranked community in the entire country for resident satisfaction. How does that happen? That happens because somebody decided their reviews were important. Somebody decided they wanted to read every single review. Somebody has some pride in what they do. An owner operator, a practitioner, someone sitting in that chair before.
And what are some things that you direct your on-site staff to do to make sure that those reviews are strong, that the community is healthy, that it's, you know, and so forth?
Well, I'll tell you what, if it comes from the top, they're going to get it done. We have systems in place. We watch them weekly coming in. You know, it's funny. You can attribute your best reviews to your best financially performing properties.
Sure.
You can attribute your worst reviewed properties, right, versus the properties that are struggling. It's black and white. It's not rocket science, right? So they know we focus on that. If the reviews aren't there, the property numbers are not going to be there. And the property numbers aren't there, then you got to make a change, right? And that's something, another lesson I learned from Gary. You know, if you watch any of his stuff, I love the guy. You know, hiring is easy, firing is hard. But you have to ask yourself, you know, the longer you deal with that pain, how long do you want to deal with it? Are you willing to risk financial performance? Because the most important person in that business is not me. I promise you it's not. It's the person sitting in the chair.
Absolutely.
He or she is running a multi-million dollar business. And most of them have high school degrees. Very few of them have college degrees. So they're making, I don't know, between 40 and let's say 75,000 on the upper end of property management in a class B space, right? Depending on unit count. And yet they're running an 8, 15, 22, $30 million community, $30 million business.
Yeah,
are they running it the way that you would want them to run it? So we do a lot of training. We have a lot of processes in place. We do have a lot of reporting that I sit in every week. I sit on those marketing calls. I sit on the operational calls and I pay attention, right? Because if I'm not there to steer the boat, you know, we're going to crash into the rocks. That's why I'm not worried about what's going on today. We're good. Our occupancy is as high as it's ever been right now. A nice benefit of COVID-19 is that people are a little scared. Mm-hmm. So they're renewing. Lots of renewals right now. This should be a heavy move-out time. It's March, and this is what we call the spring leasing season because you get a ton of leases. Well, we're not seeing those leases. So what's going on? People are renewing. They're staying where they're at, whether they're satisfied or they're not. They're staying where they're at, and they're creating a base of stability, a base of foundation. This is why some of our occupancies are doing really, really well right now. So if people don't want to lease or we just get a sprinkle of leases, we'll be okay. If I can hold on to the foundation of my renewals, we're going to be fine.
Yeah, that's great. That's awesome. And so you had mentioned people first a few times in this podcast already, and you know, hiring the right people. So how do you attract, retain, and promote the right talent?
Number one, I surround myself with heart. I don't need the smartest person. I need the person that's not going to leave me when times get tough. You know, right now I have my team working in apartment complexes where they may have to engage with people. They don't have to do that. They choose to be here. I've not heard one single complaint. At the same time, I just shot a video right now with Natalie, where out of Rockstar Carriage, which is our charitable arm of our company, we've hosted breast cancer walks and what have you. We're going to do a financial assistance to everybody starting tomorrow of $250 to help them, let them know we're thinking about you, we're thinking about your families. But how many companies do that? We're doing that tomorrow. That is a special payroll check that'll be out in their accounts on Friday. So my thing is that I try to surround myself with heart. And I people who won't quit on me. Then I try to get involved in everybody. I try to give everybody the benefit of the relationship. 5149. Ryan, tell me what's going on in your life. What's important to you? How can I help you? For many times, I've been able to help people get their first house, get their first car, fix their credit. But if I hadn't asked on how I can help them, then nobody was going to help them. They were going to continue down the road, right? Well, my thought is if I give them the majority of the relationship, they're going to like, wow, he just really helped me. I wonder what I can do to help him. And all I need people to do is just don't quit when the times get tough. Be open to a little criticism, be open to instruction, and surround yourself with as much of that as you can. You know, I'm really excited, right? I run a $380 million portfolio, and there are maybe three people in my entire organization that have a college degree. That says a lot. We're almost at half a billion, right, Ryan? And I think within 5 years, we'll be at a billion. And let's say you double that number. I mean, a $1 billion company, a $1 billion portfolio size might have 5 or 6 people with a college degree, yeah, right? Because you surround yourself with heart. As long as you're willing to learn, they learn it your way, they learn to understand, you've grown in the process, you're going to be very successful moving forward.
Oh, that's great. That's fantastic. So you look for heart, willingness to learn, any other qualities or characteristics that you look for when hiring?
No, people? Those are just very old people that are open to listen. You know, a lot of we're a very young company. Many of our managers, many of our regionals are still in their 20s. They started in 2011. I found them when they were 18, 19 years old, 20 years old. My COO, who runs, you know, the better part of 4,000 units with me, she's 29. You know,
well, that's amazing. Yeah,
it is amazing, right? We're a young company, so you find them early, you educate them, you groom them, you instill in them the values that they need to have. But more importantly, you invest in them. And when you invest in them, they never forget that. I have a lot of really deep relationships in my company with the people that were there in the beginning, right? And all of that trickles down. They're now in key leadership positions today, head of maintenance, head of operations, you know, wherever they're at in the business, you know. A regional manager, they were there in the beginning when they were 18, 19, 20 years old. And now they're 29, 30, you know, they think like you, or they wouldn't be here, right? If they're able to survive 8-9 years with me, right? They're probably doing a darn good job.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. So, you know, people have stuck with you your staff has stuck with you for a long time. And also your tenant base, you know, it seems like you have high renewal rates. So maybe just talk to us about the importance of that in terms of the focus on renewal rates and the focus on just keeping people in the units.
Well, that's the key, right? The key to the game is renewals, right? So if you have the right person in the chair, they have the right heart, they're going to take care of residents. They're going to take care of your business, right? Because all the money you make in real estate happens when people renew, not when they move in. Because when they move in, you got marketing costs, you got vacancy loss, you got commissions, you got to get the unit ready. You're talking thousands and thousands of dollars. But when somebody renews, what happens, Ryan? Nothing. They take a rent bump, $30, $40, $50, and you have zero expenses. So talk about, you know, let's go back to the NOI. Rent minus expenses equals NOI. Well, I just removed expenses where I had expenses before to bring them in. Now I've increased rent by $50 a month. I've reduced my expenses $2,000-$3,000. What does that do to the NOI? You've added hundreds of thousands of dollars of valuation. So, but the renewal is key to the game. Because if you don't have renewal, you don't have a business, right? Your renewal ratio should be really high. Like 60, 75% should be renewing. Our turnover ratio for most of our property, city average is 65% turnover. At our communities, it's under 40. It's 45 to 40. Some of my best properties are at 27, 28, which is actually a little low. You know, it's actually really low, right? Because you're not pushing rents enough, right? But your key rental growth does not come from the new lease. It comes from the renewal. Because if 65% of the people are renewing, that's your money. They're renewing, they're paying $30, $40, $50 more a month, right? Well, now you have strength. Now you have some leverage. Like, you know what? I'm going to see if I can get an extra $100, $200 on the new rate, on the new lease that's coming in. But what if you don't have the renewal? What if you're not doing a very good job? And only 40% of your people are renewing you. You're afraid. You need to lease yourself to stay full. You can't rely on your renewals. So then what do? You get desperate. You pass less renewal gain, right? And you need those new leases. You can't afford to not get that because you're not gonna end like a 90% occupancy or whatever your number is, and you lower the rates. And you don't move the needle in your business. But if you have strong renewals, you can push more rents. As I mentioned before, reputation is everything to us. If people are renewing, and we're winning awards and being recognized for people renewing, chances are we're running a financially successful business.
No, that's great. No, Robert, that's super insightful. And congratulations on the high level of renewals there. That's fantastic. It's unprecedented. So let's turn to acquisitions. So walk us through your acquisition strategy. What type of assets you like to buy? What your hold periods are? What you look for in terms of target returns?
So in the early part of my life, because I know you got different listeners on here, I was focused on 100 to 125 units. And I realized that in my previous company, I recognized that the smaller the unit, the more money we can make from it, right? The more control you had. There was nobody in between the residents and the manager. As you got larger, you started to have issues. But what happened at the time, there were growing pains. I had issues because I didn't have my policies in place. I didn't have I didn't have the right situation. Today is a very different situation. I go for larger deals because I'm now moved my marketing from flags and banners. I move my marketing online to reputation management, to Facebook advertising, Google advertising, SEO. I'm like SEO optimization of your websites. That didn't exist for me 8, 9, 10 years ago. So the more units, the better, Ryan. The reason why is that more units gives you options. If I have more income coming in, I can call, remember who's the most important person in the business, the person sitting in the chair. So if I have more units coming in, I can afford to pay them more. So maybe instead of paying them $60,000, I can get them to $70,000, and you're going to get a different quality of person. Just like somebody who makes $80,000 a year versus somebody who makes $150,000 a year, right? That's a different kind of person, isn't it? Right? They have a different I don't know what the way, skill set. Right? There should be a difference. What's the same thing with property managers? If you can pay a little bit more, right, you're probably going to get better decisions. The reason why I couldn't attract a Graystar or Camden 3 years ago is I couldn't pay that much. I couldn't afford to pay what they needed to make, right? I needed to pay at this level. Well, you've got to dig in. You've got to invest, right? But the easiest way is to bring in more income. More income also means more marketing dollars. If we're doing Facebook ads, if we're doing Google ads, you're like, everybody is right here living on this. And they're doing it all day long and they're watching your ads and they're doing, but if you don't know that, you're not getting that next level of renter. You're relying on drive-by traffic, pretty flags and pretty colors on the outside. That's a lower demographic traffic than we want. We want the people that find us on here. So I focus a lot on bigger units now. I don't try not to buy the 100 and some unit deal unless it's a complimentary deal. Right? Because I like the cluster. I like to own a submarket. You know, we all play Monopoly, right? I like to buy the submarket because if I buy the submarket, then I can control rents. Sure. I can control fees. And if they don't want to live here, they don't have to live here, but they're going to have to drive 10 miles down the road to the next community, to the next submarket, right? We will own this submarket. So in Humble, Texas, where we got started, we have 8 sites. We're expanding down to Kingsville. I'm going to buy a 120-unit deal in Kingsville, but because I already have 250 units there. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's going to complement each other. We're going to get some staff share. Sure. We're going to share information. If they can't afford the class A property that we manage there, they might want to come to the class B property that we manage. Same management company. We're not changing any different. It's just a little bit nicer finishes versus, a property that was built in the 70s or the 80s. And location. If you don't have to pay for marketing, don't. Right. Mm-hmm. Location is still very important in real estate. I like busy roads. I also like properties that are in the suburbs. Why do I like the suburbs? Because that's where the good schools are. And families follow the good schools. They want to be in this elementary. They want to be in that high school. And they probably won't move while they're with you because they want to keep their kid in that school district. So as long as you take care of them and you focus on basic services, make sure that their water keeps running, that the air conditioning is cold, you know, then they're not going to move out. And if you're reading every single review and, you know they have a voice to get to the owner of the business, chances are they're going to renew later on.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then in terms of hold periods and target returns, what do you look for there?
So we try to target a return of 7 to 10 years, right? But typically 10 years. My goal is to do an annualized return of around 6% cash on cash. However, we got equity built up. We're creating a valuation by moving the needle of the NOI. So in 3 years, 3 to 4 years, we're looking to do a large cash out refinance. Hopefully that will be the better part of 100% of your income. But I'm sorry, the better part of 100% of your investment. But by the end of the 10-year cycle, we're looking at a 3x return. But sometimes you knock it out of the park. You know, we just sold a deal in December of 2019. I bought that deal in 2012, and we sold it for a 673% return in 7 years. That's a 96% IRR. That's crazy. And I probably have 3 or 4 other deals just like that if that were to sell today, right? Because I bought them at the right time in the market, and then I operated them, and we managed them up.
And then what about physical cash? You talked about location being next to schools. Is there anything in terms of roofs, flat roofs, anything in terms of mechanicals that you shy away from?
No, I don't like chillers at all. Because I think everybody wants to have their own individual air conditioning control. I think that's really important. I don't like chillers, but I remember part of my rehab is to replace all the air conditions day one. And the reason why I do that is because I want certainty of service, right? It cannot be 80 degrees in your apartment when it's 95 degrees outside. You're not going to get that renewal. The number one reason why people move out is maintenance. And the number one maintenance headache is air conditioning. So if you eliminate air conditions, you've now eliminated the number one reason why they move out. so that you play the odds, you play the percentages, and you get a little stronger in that. But I love properties that have been owned by the owner for a long time. I love properties that have been that have had a manager sitting in that chair for a long time. Because what happens is they get a little ripe, a little too ripe. And they start to get a little too close to the residents, and they can't make the business decision, and they make an emotional decision. They allow someone to pay late on rent. They don't pass a $50 rent bump. They pass a $15 rent bump. I remember a property that we bought in 2014. It was a little 104-unit property. And we saw a $10,000 increase in monthly income in the first month. And I hadn't even done anything yet. Occupancy stayed the same. I hadn't even really put my rehab into place. And what was happening was the manager in the chair was doing something interesting. She was either pocketing the money, or because the owner was running a ledger spreadsheet type system and not a true property management software, he wasn't recording all the money. That turned into, we hit our year one projection in 1 month. And I wish I could take credit for it. And I can't other than the fact that I learned that when you buy a mom and pop, a property from a mom and pop operator who's running on ledgers, and you have a manager in place who has been there for 15 years, you have a lot of what I call juice on the vine.
Yeah, that's great.
So there's a great opportunity to get a value add from that where you didn't even know a value add was there. You know, you typically focus on air conditions, on roofs, on making the finishes nicer. You never think about a value add from the property manager chair, from just putting in software that you do on an everyday basis. You just assume everybody's doing that. But once in a while, you get that, you know, and you're like, oh my God, I just knocked out of the park. So this deal down in Kingsville that we're looking at, right, that you, it's obviously still, there's still an opportunity to invest in that. You know, manager, owners held it for 10 plus years. Manager's been sitting in the chair 22 years in that chair. And I'm like, wow. I cannot wait to get that deal because I know what that
means.
That's
great.
I know what that means.
Sure.
I've done the market surveys. They're not charging utilities. They're not charging back stuff. I mean, if you're not charging rubs back right now in 2020, what other kind of inefficiencies are there, right? So it's literally going back in time some, and I'm really excited about that deal.
No, that's awesome. That's great. And is there a quick way for you to screen deals? A number of deals come across your desk every week. You know, how do you put them in two piles of let's spend more time, or these are done, dead?
Well, number one is I don't like to go to a new market unless there's a reason to go there. So if I'm going to go to a new submarket, I got to know that I can buy more in that deal. Because remember, I like to cluster. I'm not going to go out to, I don't know, let's say Warden, Texas, which is the southwest part of Houston. If there's no population there, why do I want to be there? Mm. But I'll go to Humble if I can buy 8 more Class B deals and I can control the submarket. I'll go down to Alvin if I can own the submarket and own 28% of the submarket across 4 deals. I'll go to Kingsville if I can go down to the submarket and buy complementary deals, right? So it's really important that I look for something that's got complementary ability. I don't want to go somewhere and then not have it. And if I am going to go to a new submarket, I'm not going to limp in with 120 units. I'm going to buy 250 and plus because I need to have a base of operations. I got to have
scale.
You got to have the bigger, the better on that first deal. You can buy a smaller deal to complement it, but in that first deal, you need to have some size.
Has your criteria changed at all given the current environment?
Well, certainly, you know, things are going to change right now. You know, this current environment is very new for us. You got to be very selective. These two deals that we looked at before, we went through $1.4 billion in underwriting in the previous 90 days to spit out these two deals, you know. Mm. And one of them we're going to pursue in Kingsville, the other one down the valley, it just came in too late, right? We had the contract. He sat on the contract too long is what happened. And then all of this, you know, travel restrictions came in. And I'm like, dude, I cannot get in this if I can't control when the third parties are going to go in there with them, when the appraiser is going to get there, when the survey is going to get there. You know, he's going to take my earnest money, right? So I said that, hey, you know what? Sure. I have to walk away. Plus, there was a little less juice on that vine. It was a very well-run property, but I wanted to be down in the valley. And so I said, listen, unless I can't do this deal right now, I'll pay this price down the line, but I can't do it right now because I don't know if I can close. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, if you're paying attention, Ryan, which I'm sure you are, financing is changing very quickly. You know, that deal down in South Texas was a 65% tier two area, but you could get a waiver to get to 75. Well, the waiver just went away. So now you're at 65% leverage. I'm like, oh, that changes the deal dynamics right away.
Oh,
and you
yes,
wonder, okay, sure, well, what is your exposure to unemployment? Where are there people working? Are they student housing? Is it a heavy college area? You know, I hear Fannie's not lending at all for student housing right now, right? Well, there's a reason for it. They're afraid that they're not going to pay. They're not in school. They're not going to live there. So they're very concerned. So, you know, there's a lot of factors you have to keep in mind, right? Where are you going to invest in? Especially in today, it's more critical than ever to get it right. Because if you get it wrong right now, if you pay for a property right now and you close in the next 30 days, man, what's going to look like 30 days from now? 45 days from now, 90 days from now, when unemployment really kicks in and people maybe can make that April rent payment, but they can't pay May and June. You're going to lose valuation almost immediately, right? So you got to be really careful what you pay for today. There will be a price deduct coming. It'll probably be Q3, Q4. The thing that I don't know, Ryan, is because government's getting involved, government's getting in the way, they're going to keep people from dying. And that's what's happened. In the recession, that didn't happen. When I moved in into the recession, and that's where my real estate career was born. You know, we put people into the ground. We came in with a low cost basis. You know, we came in with a rehab dollars. We were the prettiest sister on that block, best in class by far. So the guy that had been there for a while that looked tired, he died. He lost his deal in receivership or whatever happened in foreclosure, and it went away. Well, right now the government's really kind of getting in the way. And they're going to prevent foreclosures. They're going to prevent those kind of things. They're going to give you assistance, right? So I don't know exactly what the future is going to look like. If the government would stay away, and I know people are hearing this right now, they're thinking, oh, you know, but is that really the kind of country we want to live in? And we want to live in a socialistic kind of country that people are waiting for their handout and their stimulus check? Or you want it the way it was 2 months ago, where it was survival of the fittest and you operate and you try to win? That's capitalism. So when the government gets involved and starts bailing out everybody and starts bailing out, you know, small business owners, and I don't know what's going to happen. I'm not saying one way is right or the other. I just, it really clouds the crystal ball. You don't know what's going to happen.
Sure. And then, you know, you talked about an interesting point you made is going in, kind of the business plan is change the ACs day one. What other things do you typically do in part of executing your business plan?
Well, again, I mentioned it a couple of times because it's so important. Basic services. So I go in there and I look at the utilities first. Okay, is there a gas? Okay, great. That means they have a boiler. How old is the boiler? Is it 20 years old? Is it 5 years old? Chances are it's not as efficient as it once was. Sometimes you get a boiler that's like from 1976 or from 1984 and you get really excited. You're like, whoa, that's exciting, right? Because that boiler is probably operating at like 50% efficiency. I can go with a brand new boiler. It's going to be running at 95, 97% efficiency. I'm going to save on the gas bill, number one. You change out the air conditions, right? You've now increased your chance of renewal, but at Rockstar Capital, we have a business plan where we do a all utilities included kind of concept where you pay us a flat fee for water, trash, and gas, right? So if I can change out the air conditioning, that means I made that air conditioning more affordable. Being a commercial owner, I'm not going to pay 9 or 10 cents like I would residential, like they were probably paying. I'm going to pay 3.5, 4 cents. Right? So I can charge them back what's a reasonable fee to them, what they were paying to their utility provider. But being the owner operator, we're paying half for the same amount of energy consumption. So there's a lot of great opportunities to focus on resident retention by making everything new, but also focus as an owner operator and from a financials, you know, a good steward for your investors by keeping a lot of the savings there that maybe the residents might get if you were to change out the air conditioner.
Oh, that's great. I appreciate that. And then in terms of financing, you know, you touched upon, you know, the financing markets are changing daily, absolutely, during this kind of dislocated times. And what is your typical financing that you like to use and has that changed at all?
Every deal is different and every business plan is a little bit different, right? So you have Fannie and Freddie products and of course you have temporary debt like bridge debt. You know, Fannie and Freddie offers a lot of security, but there's also some restrictions in there. Right? I like to do a big cash out refinance. That's part of my motto. In 3-4 years, you know, I want to do that. We, you know, as you, I don't know if you mentioned earlier in my bio, but I've done 12 100% cash out refinances since 2011. You know, go back and add the three more that I was responsible for before I had Rockstar Capital. Now you're looking at, you know, 15 100% cash out refinances. So I know how to move the needle, but I have to have the right kind of financing in place to allow me to do that big equity pullout on a Fannie loan. Again, it's non-recourse. But you have to do it within 5 years, number one. And then you still have that loan. What if loan rates change? right? So, you know, you got to figure out what you want. Right now is a great time to do bridge financing because the rates are so low. You got this base against LIBOR or maybe the T-bill, which is super low. We're about to do this acquisition down in South Texas, and it's with the bank, and it's like LIBOR plus, I don't know, 275, but they're going to put a cap or like a floor of like, you know, 375 or 365 or whatever the number is.
Okay.
That's crazy good. The same Fannie Mae product right now is 5%. Did you know that?
Yeah. Yes.
5%. Yeah, and it wasn't like that. It's ridiculous. It wasn't like that 45 days ago. You know, we have a refinance in place for a property in Rosenberg that we're going to get done. But we signed the application before they moved the spreads. So we're locked in. But my lender,
that's great.
Yeah. My lender is saying you need to get this done by April 15th because I think they're looking for a way to get out of this. So you better agree to whatever they said on their property condition assessment because they sent some guy out there. He nitpicked the junk out of the property. I've never seen a more aggressive property condition report. But it's still worth it to do these little Mickey Mouse repairs that he's asking for to get that quality of loan because there is a tomorrow. COVID-19, whatever the latest crisis will go away. And there is tomorrow. And what you do today will affect what happens tomorrow. How you treat your staff, how you treat your residents, and how you handle your business as a whole, right? So you've got to think about that. So maybe we'll make a couple less dollars because we have to do these improvements. It's still improvements on the property, right?
Sure.
And we're going to get the lion's share of that loan. And, you know, we'll be one of the few guys that are not only buying a deal, but are actually closing a refinance. I mean, who's doing a refinance right now? You know, we might get this done by April 15th.
Yeah, no, all the best there.
Yeah.
And, you know, you talked about the crystal ball. I mean, anybody's crystal ball is a little bit clouded right now, just given all the uncertainty in the market. But what do you think is going to happen, whether if you want to talk at your properties as a whole or maybe, you know, Houston or Texas in terms of rental growth this year or rental declines this year, 2020 and then 2021?
So I think, you know, again, crystal ball is cloudy right now, right? Because government's getting in there. And they're preventing people from going out of business. However, people are still operating in a situation where they're going to have less money than what they had before. There's a lot of fear right now. The name of the game for us in the apartment business is renewal. We are getting forced renewals because of COVID-19. That means that we have a little bit of strength and a little bit of leverage. Where we were doing discount renewals in the beginning, $19 renewals, right? Because we got to see what's going on right now. We're starting to increase the renewals, right? Because we're starting to realize, people really don't want to leave. Mm-hmm. They want to stay here, right? So where there has been no rent growth so much, maybe 2% rent growth the last 12 to 24 months in Houston on an annual basis, there's been so much construction that I think you're going to start to see a little bit more rent growth right now, a little more higher occupancies because the residents are sticking in there. However, those Class A guys are going to get killed. They're going to get killed. Those Class A developers, the Class A apartment owners, and the Class C guys are going to get killed because those are the guys that don't have a lot of jobs right now. I think your blue collar Class B workforce, I think they're going to be okay. If they're renewing, you're going to be good. And I think what I'm hearing from a lot of my colleagues is that they're seeing really good renewal numbers right now. So I think that'll happen for the next 12 months because people don't want to move in a time of uncertainty. If you've lost a paycheck or two, In this kind of demographic that we're in, you feel that for the next 12 to 24 months. Just like what happened during the recession, it killed home buying because people saw friends lose their homes, right? It's the same thing. People were analyzing, crap, I just got exposed. Remember, as I said before, this crisis is testing everybody's liquidity and assessing their solvency, assessing how much money they have in the bank. People realize, I don't have enough money in the bank. I need to kind of chill and keep my expenses where they're at. And maybe the devil I know is better than the devil I don't know. Maybe I don't want to pay an extra $100 to go to that high-end property. Maybe I need to just stick here and put that $1,200, you know, away. You know, right now I have an opportunity to upgrade my apartment where I live in, you know, to get like the nicest unit they have. And I'm like, you know, I really want to go and spend that much more money. So if I'm doing it at my end, I know people are doing it on the other side too, right? Oh, hey, living in a Class A apartment high rise has taught me a lot of great lessons. I see how other people take care of their residents. I see how that works. And I've been able to really do a comparison on what they do and how we do it and like take the best and kind of, you know, and then not take the best. So it's really helped me get some perspective on what's going on.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And if we shift to asset management, just maybe you can walk us through how you manage your assets. I mean, it sounds like you're very hands-on. So what KPIs do you focus on? You had mentioned reviews, obviously that's probably number one, but what other things are important to you, Robert?
Yeah, again, the name of the game is renewals. So if you focus on the resident experience, then you're going to be okay, right? Because if it's good for the resident, it's good for you. So renewals are key, right? But how do you get the renewal? Well, as you mentioned before, you get it through resident reviews. I pay attention to each one of those, right? Because it's a story. They're writing a little story to you on their experience, on their life. They're giving you a big review of what's going on. If you listen to that review, you can hear when things are going great and you can hear when things are going wrong. So if I had to only pick one KPI, I would focus on the resident renewals. If I start losing renewals, there's something going on because that will have a chain reaction, a domino effect later on in the future T12, right? You're going to see, right? I can see what's going on for the P&L. You can see when things were going up and when things are going down. What happened there? I bet if I were to go look at the reviews, the reviews were off. The reviews are off because the resident renewals are off, right? So we focus on that. Again, we talked about the resident retention, you know, city average is 65%. Our resident retention is somewhere between 40 and 45%, right? I mean, I'm sorry, turnover, excuse me. Resident turnover is 65%. Our turnover is closer to 40, 45%, right? Because if you have strength in the renewals, you will have strength. It's a chicken and egg. You'll have strength on the other side when you're pushing your occupancy forward. What else? I can also, I'm a big people person.
Yes.
And I can see when things are going on at home. Because I can read a P&L. I know that, hey, you know what? So-and-so was always doing so well. Now, what? Can you check on their situation? Can you tell me? Oh, they're going through a divorce. Ooh, they're going through an issue at home or somebody's sick or somebody, whatever, right? You know, I can have the best laid business plan, but the most important person sitting in that chair, and the person most important in the business is the one sitting in that chair. And sure. If things are not right at home, I can see that. Yes. I can see on the P&L. I need to train my teams to not only see in the P&L, but also get involved in their personal life. Because I mean, as I grow, I can't talk to everybody. I can't see it. I am the last line of defense, which is why I see the reviews. But when I see a P&L, it's 30 days later.
Sure.
The damage or the success story is already done, right? And so it's really important to make sure that your team is addressing those issues for you.
And then Robert, that's really insightful. And you know, one thing I wanted to ask you about is what incentive plans for your staff have you seen work well? You know, whether it's the leasing staff, whether it's the on-site maintenance, and then what plans don't work well?
Well, I don't think just giving a simple leasing commission bonus or a resident renewal bonus is the right way. I think you need to train your leaders of tomorrow, and you need to train them to think like you. And so they need to understand there is a budget. It's not just something I put together at the beginning of the year and I send it to their investors. That's a budget that they have to put together with the regional manager. And they have to understand that their compensation is tied to that budget. And I tell you what, when we changed, right, because we grew from an owner-operator into a larger company, right, I can't look and control the budget for everybody. The manager has to control the budget. Mm-hmm. It's interesting when you see somebody miss on income for one reason or another, how their expenses all of a sudden drop because they want to hit their NOI number. Right. They know their bonus is tied to the NOI. All the money is in the NOI. Right. Mm-hmm. So they can kind of, you know what? I don't need to do that carpet change. I don't need to do it. I'll push that to next month. That's okay. That's being a good steward of your business. Right. It's knowing when to spend, when not to spend. Right. But before there was like spending. There's no accountability, you know, for income. And because they get paid for renewals or there's no accountability for renewals because they're getting paid on new leases. I don't know who they're moving in. I'm not going through every one of the screening criteria. I'm trusting them. But when you put it on the NOI, there's nowhere to go. You either have a property that's performing and hitting budget or it's not. And if you're not, what's more important is what are you going to do about it? What's the discipline behind it? What's the accountability behind it? Those are the metrics that I follow. I believe that if I hire the right people and I surround myself with heart, I'll get the best performance. I personally interview everybody that joins this company. Mm-hmm. This is my reputation. This is the money. This is the company. This is the vehicle that my investors have chosen to invest in. And I see it. There's a high amount of pride in this business, as you see with all of our awards. I want to continue to win those awards. I want to continue to have accountability. I want to continue to be called the apartment rock star. I want to earn that name. And my team wants to know, hey, our company's called Rockstar Capital. I mean, that's a big name. We've been doing that for the better part of 10 years, right? You would draw a certain amount of attention, but you also draw a certain amount of pride. And everybody wants to play up to that name. So I think that if you show them how to think like you, if you have brain share with them, I think that they will grow. And now you're building your leaders for tomorrow. You know, again, my COO in the business, right, was my very first property manager. Then she was my very first regional manager. Then she was my very first VP of operations. And if she's grown into the business, right, she's my very first COO, which means somebody behind her had to become VP of operations, right? So you grow the business organically, but that doesn't happen if you don't teach them early, if you don't give them accountability.
I appreciate that. And then you had seemed to do a great job, Robert, of getting inside the mind of whether a prospective tenant, an existing tenant. And what things do you see that tenants want? What are they willing to pay for in terms of amenities, in terms of upgrades?
Right. So remember, right? So everybody has, I can only control what happens in the four walls of my business. I can't control COVID-19, but I can control what people see when they come to my apartment complex, right? So I have what's called the Golden Brick Road. It's the moment that you drive up to my community, you check out my leasing office, you're looking around the grounds and the driveways you just drove up, you go and is my leasing professional or my manager, are they presentable? Do they look like they've been out all night? Or they look like they're chipper and they're ready to brighten and bushy-tailed, ready to go and help you? Are they asking the right questions? As you tour the amenities, right? How do the amenities look? Have the grounds been picked up? Are the yards manicured? What does the model look like? That model better be clean. That is your controlled your controlled element, right? There is no variables in that. That should be perfect. The lights should all be on and they should all work. There better not be a light bulb that's out. There better not be stains in the carpet. There better not be a roach somewhere that needs to be walked multiple times in the day to make sure that unit looks great, because you are creating an impression. You're creating the resident experience, the leasing experience on what's going to determine on whether or not that person leases with you. And if they can't come in, right, we've gone virtual. You can now go to any of our sites. You can see 3D floor plans. You can go on an actual room by room virtual tour that we use with a professional company that we've had for 24 months, right? Because I recognize there was a day when people were not going to come to the leasing office and we need to be prepared for that. That's what I can control. You talk about amenities. You know what? It's great if you have a Las Vegas inspired resort pool. It's great if you have a gym that would rival a Lifetime Fitness. But I can tell you, having lived at probably the nicest apartment complex in all of Houston, I'm talking about the one that's got the pool that goes over the building. I'm talking about the one that's got the craziest theater room, that has a basketball court, that has an amazing fitness center, that has a poker room, that has a steam room, a sauna. I went in there maybe three times in my 18 months that I was there, but I was always in my apartment. And if everything worked in my apartment, I'm not going to renew. I'm not going to move out, right? That's what's important to me. Now, I did move out, but I didn't move out because of bad service, and I didn't move out because of anything wrong with my apartment. I moved out because I wanted to get closer to a certain part of town. That was downtown living. I wanted to get back to River Oaks area where my life was, you know, my business was, what things were important to me were, and I didn't want to fight traffic. But I would never move out. No, it wasn't because of the amenities. It's because I liked my view, which was important to me, but I also liked my finishes. So I'm in a similar property where I have a similar view and similar finishes, right? People want to live, they live in the apartment. They don't live in the amenities. So back to what I'm saying is, it's like the four walls of your business. Can you control the four walls of your business? Amenities are important. They're nice to have, but at the end of the day, basic services. Make sure that water is always hot. One of the things that I always remember from that one apartment complex, that high rise, was that they had a tankless water heater. It never ran out of hot water. The place where I'm at right now doesn't have it. And so if it's on for like 30 minutes or 35 minutes, that hot water is gone. I remember that, right? excuse me. If the air condition doesn't work as well at this community because it's a little bit older than the place that I was at before. Never had an air condition problem, but I've had it a couple times here. It leaves an impression. Again, what keeps me at this apartment complex is the location of something that's important and dear to me that I want to maintain. excuse me. So it's really important to have that in mind. It's not the amenities, it's the resident experience. Are they happy?
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And then, you know, just what are some of the more pressing challenges that you're facing in your business?
As we grow, again, I'm repeating myself and I apologize, but it's that important. It's people, because you cannot grow to a new area if you don't have the right people there to grow with. Who are you going to put into that new territory and that unknown frontier, right? You're going to hire somebody locally who doesn't know your business culture and your business plan, or you're going to get one of your people that have been with you for 5-10 years, and you know that they're going to run that and they're going to run it the rockstar way. People is really important. But the way you get that culture is that you invest in people and you educate them. Communication is the key to life. I'm going to communicate with you what's important to me. You're going to communicate with me what's important to you. I'm going to do my best to help you get that. I believe that you'll do your best to help me get what I want. And that's the key. But that gets hard as you grow. You grow. We were a much closer company when we were smaller than we are today, right? Because there's now layers and layers and layers between me and the prospect or the resident. I got a leasing agent, I got an assistant manager, I got a leasing director, I got a property manager, I got a regional, I got a VP of operations, a VP of marketing. I have my COO, I have my CIO. There's layers of people, right? I know what to do, it's here. But I can't make that call if I'm not sitting in that chair. So the people sitting in the chair have to share the same brain. They have to know what's expected of them.
And then just whether some advice or tips for owners, operators, as they're thinking about, should they third party property manage or should they manage themselves? What are your kind of guidelines?
Look, you know the answer to this before you're asking the question, because I've told you this answer and I tell it all the time. I don't believe in third party property managers. I think if they don't have skin in the game, why would they give you their heart? Mm-hmm. Why would they go out of their way for you? They don't. They're just not going to. If they don't have something to lose, they're not going to fight tooth and nail to keep that property afloat. I think that when someone goes and signs recourse loan on a deal and they have $5 million as recourse to them and their family, I think they're going to fight for you. I think they don't want to lose that. I think they're thinking about their kids, what they're going to eat tomorrow. I think they're thinking about their kids' future college. I know I've got 3 recourse. I probably owe $40 million in recourse loans. But you know what? I'm willing to take that risk, but you're also going to get the best out of me. Not only do I have my personal equity in the deal, you have my personal guarantee in the deal, which means that if that deal goes down, I'm not coming to you to make a hole. The bank's coming to me to make a hole, right? And so it's really important that whoever you invest with has that understanding already, has explained that to you as the investor, shows a passion for the business, and shows a little bit of insight and intellect on what's going to happen. I think being a sales guy in my previous life was very important to me. And I think it helped separate me from the masses. But I believe that sitting in that chair and getting that experience and learning the rules of the game was the most important development that I could ever have done myself. I invested in myself before I ever took, did you know that, Ryan? Before I ever took an investment dollar from anybody, I sat in that chair from 2007 to 2011, learning the business.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And that's what's so admirable about your story is, you wanted to grow the business organically and grow it the right way.
Yeah. I wish I could say I had this big master plan. You know, I didn't. It just kind of evolved like that, right? And I think because in my heart, I want people to win. I don't want to win alone. You know, I don't want to go to the top of the mountain because I believe I'm going to win, but I don't want to get to the top of the mountain and be there alone and have nobody to, you know, slap on the shoulder and say, hey, remember that time in 2020 we went through COVID? Hey, remember that recession we went through back in 2009 to 2011? You know, remember what we did? Remember all those lessons? I also don't want to win financially alone. They need to win with me. You know, I don't want it to just be right place, right time, right, where people were invested with me in the beginning or getting the best benefit, or people that joined my company in the beginning or had the best benefit. I mean, I've established an opportunity for each of my staff, right? Hey, do you want to invest in an apartment complex? I will match you, right? Mm-hmm. I don't have a 401k. I don't believe in the stock market. I didn't lose a dollar in the stock market in the last month, and I didn't lose a dollar in the stock market during the recession, right? Because my money was in real estate. My real estate didn't move up and down. My real estate was stable and I moved that needle myself. I controlled what was going on, not some crazy, you know, event that I couldn't control, right? But back to what I was saying, I've given my team an opportunity where if you put $5,000 in, I'll match you. I'll put $5,000 in to match you. Now you own an apartment complex. What if you had done that in 2012 on that deal that we bought, right? That returned 693% return. That means your $5,000 turned into 10 when I matched it, is now worth $69,300.
Sure.
Years later. You help people create an opportunity for themselves. And I think that if you do that for people and you invest in them, they're going to give you the best that they got.
So as we wind down here, just a few questions for you, Robert. Sure. What advice do you have for people getting into the business, both passives and first-time syndicators?
I think you need to educate yourself immensely and come into this eyes wide open. Before you're willing to invest in anything, invest in yourself first. Get the education. Join a real estate club. Get with like-minded people. Learn from people that are where you're at, or join privately. You know, find from people that you think are where you want to be, and get mentored by them.
Awesome. And then for first-time syndicators,
I would not buy small. I think it's a joke to buy 40, 50 units. I don't think you get to learn from that, because that's not really where you want to be anyway. I think that you should try to buy the biggest opportunity you can. Nothing less than 100 to 120 units. That gives you enough management money to come in, and or enough payroll to pay for a full-time manager and a full-time staff, right? And if I were to follow that up with a caveat, I think don't let a good staff member get away from you. You know, if you want to hire somebody and you think that they can help you get where you want, don't let that $5,000 or $10,000 get in the way, because you're paying for their experience. You're paying for your knowledge. You're paying so that you don't make mistakes in the future. You know, when I joined that real estate club, people didn't want to pay. They didn't want to join. I paid $10,000 to join that club. It was the best $10,000 I could ever have invested in my life, because it created a career. It created a path for me. It changed my family tree, you know, to where I could provide for myself, but not only myself, my kids and others in my business. So don't let $5,000 or $10,000 get in the way, right? Education and experience is everything.
Yeah, that's great. No, that's very insightful. Robert, this has just been an incredible time. You dropped golden nuggets, you know, along the whole podcast here. So I think the listeners are just going to appreciate this so much. How can people get in touch with you?
Well, number one, if you're looking to invest with Rockstar Capital, you can go to rockstarcapital.com. You can click the investor sign up button. You'll get a great email from me. You'll get a video on what it's like to be an investor with Rockstar Capital. But if you just want to get knowledge, right? As you said, I throw out a lot of free knowledge and nuggets. You can find me on LinkedIn. I do full articles, at least 1 to 2 every week. You know, I've hired somebody on my team to help me write articles and make sure that they, okay, on Thursday, this is your day, so we can put it out on Friday, right? So we can get the best kind of knowledge out there. Or you can follow me on Facebook if you just want to be my friend, or on Instagram. I have a lot of micros and memes and stories that show you my day-to-day life. You know, I have a thing where we try to call it the journey to 10,000 units. I want to get to 10,000 units, but I don't want to get there overnight. I want to enjoy the journey, you know. I want to be able to enjoy the ride and see how we got there and go through the COVID-19s of the world and show that. And I'll show you what that looks like if you follow me on Instagram at Apartment Rockstar.
That's great. Well, Robert, thank you so much for your time and for being so gracious, given how busy things are for you. This was just incredible. So really appreciate it. And so much for the listeners to learn and take away from your words of wisdom and your experience.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Ryan. Hey, and I really like the title of your podcast, Multifamily Rockstars. Hopefully this is like the highest viewership you have on the podcast.
Yeah, no, I hope so. This was fantastic. This is, you know, this was the 10th episode. And so that was my goal, was to do 10 episodes. And so we're hitting it at a definitely a high point. So
really, all right. I'm hitting a special number. 10's a good luck number.
So thank you so much, Robert. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for the opportunity to allow me to share my company story and the teammates and all of our success.
Great. We'll be in touch.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Apartment Rockstar podcast. If you want to learn more about Robert Martinez, feel free to go to www.theapartmentrockstar.com. Follow him on Instagram at Apartment Rockstar and connect through LinkedIn at Robert Martinez. If you are interested in apartment investing through Rockstar Capital, go to investors.rockstar-capital.com. This has been a production of Rockstar Capital.